When is the last time you listened to a podcast about web development, web design, and small business and didn't fall asleep? Yes, we cover web development, web design, and small business, but like actual human beings with personalities. If you're a beginner, we're not going to talk over your head. It's more like asking your buddy for help. We have guests, we have fun, and let me tell you, these two can get off on a tangent. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to HTML All the Things Podcast. This is Matt Lawrence and Mike Curran.
That's it, everybody. We are back. This is the HTML All the Things Podcast. This episode is titled Junior Developer versus Senior Developer, A Fight to the Death Awaits. That's not the title. It's just junior developer versus senior developer. I'm gonna leave it at that. I was gonna explain the episode. I'm just not gonna do it. So if this sounds interesting to you and you want to support the show, you can go check us out on that Patreon. Leave a review or rating on your podcast app. Join us in our Discord server or share this with your friends. And remember that we do have a Scrimba affiliate link if you want to learn on an interactive media player code editor. Learn web development with their subscriptions, with their free courses, etc., etc. Our affiliate link will be in the show description and in the show notes on HTMLallthethings.com. Mike, you wrote this episode up, so please tell us how this fight to the death will work today.
Well, the senior developer has a hammer, and the junior developer has a screwdriver, and they just go at each other. And that's the episode, ladies and gentlemen.
We got ChatGPT to draw this, and then that's it. So we're just going to upload this to our website, and we should be good.
Yep. Thank you. Okay. So junior developer versus senior developer. What I want to do in this episode is kind of break down the differences in the stages of developer. I think we've all heard a million different things about like junior, senior, intermediate, staff, tech leads, stuff like that. So I'll cover the basic ones. Again, the ones that I just mentioned, there's at different companies, there's different levels as well. Like Google and Amazon have like L1, L2, L3, and then all that. I'm not going to cover that because it's very company specific. I'm going to cover the general ideas around the big top, the big developer category. So again, junior developer, intermediate, like regular developer, senior developer, tech lead, and staff engineer. Those are the ones I'm going to cover. I'm going to kind of give you an explanation of what they are, how you should determine if you're in that level. I'm going to talk about that as well. And I'm going to give you like an example of a task that they should be able to do, just to kind of like round it out. One thing I do want to say before we move on is that a lot of this applies for like intermediate to large companies. When you're talking about startups, these start to get melded together really quickly. And essentially, in a startup environment, it almost doesn't matter what your title is. Like a junior developer in a startup environment could technically be doing stuff that like a staff engineer would do at a regular company. Maybe not as well as a staff engineer, but like they might have the same responsibilities, right? Like a startup, you could a random person that just started development could be given the title of CTO. Like that's a very legitimate thing that happens at startups. So titles at startups don't matter so much. They're great for the resume, sure, for the grand scheme of things, but even then they're taken with a grain of salt when actually like recruiters come to you if they see that you've only been in startups. Not a bad thing, because a startup mindset is taken into account, because a lot of people will hire startup mindset people to like build products quickly, but it's a different level of seniority that is given. So for instance, for me, I usually only work at startups. So I give myself like, at a startup right now, I am a tech lead slash engineering manager. But in like a larger company, like a Microsoft level company, or even like just like a larger corporation company, a bank, I would probably be in like an intermediate development, maybe touching senior a little bit, right? Like that's how I rate myself. But in a small company, I'm more in that tech lead senior developer role.
That also has to do with the experience you have with their tech though too, right? Because like if you're like super into something proprietary that they're building, and then they, you know, everyone else leaves, you're the only one there, or you've been there the longest, and then they're like, hey, we're growing, but we do need a manager. It's like, well, who, we're not going to give a junior, like total fresh guy that's never worked on this stuff before, the manager position. So here you go, you know?
Yeah. And that happens all the time. And it is a lot of what I'm going to be talking about is pretty arbitrary, unfortunately, but it is a little bit, at least somewhat important to classify for yourselves included, so that you know what to kind of strive to and to make it easier for you to sell yourself to these positions. Because when you're going from job to job, like I know a lot of people have been laid off recently, and your next job ideally will be something that will upgrade you. Like you should be going aiming for higher than you currently are. And the purpose of this episode is to show you where you land on the range so that you can go after those roles. And if you don't land on one of the ranges, like if you consider yourself a junior and it kind of ticks all the boxes, what you'll need to do to get to that intermediate range and stuff like that. So that's the purpose of this episode. It's not to give a 100% definition of each and every single one to be, you know, accurate across all companies. That's not possible, but the general idea should work. All right, cool. So let's dive right in. Junior developer, the first one that we're going to talk about. This is an entry-level role to get into tech. Ironically, a lot of times they will require in the job description like 1 to 3 years of experience for whatever reason, even though it's an entry-level role. This has been memed a lot. This has been talked about a lot. The reality is this can mostly be ignored, the years requirement, because again, entry-level, especially if you have a good portfolio. So like if you have a really good portfolio, if you worked on open source projects, even if you haven't and you just have your own cool projects that you worked on, you have a good education, ignore the years required in a junior developer role, period. Typically, a junior developer role will involve longer onboarding, a lot of mentoring, over-the-shoulder support. So you'll have that ability to ramp up, right? These roles are pretty rare right now because that onboarding time is very expensive for companies. And from multiple perspectives. So like it's expensive because usually you're not going to be producing anything of value to a company for like 3 to 6 months. And you're also going to be taking up time of it's like senior, intermediate, staff engineer, like you're going to be taking up the development time of others. But it is key, like for a junior developer to succeed, it is really important that the onboarding be very deliberate and planned. And like you should be patient with a junior developer, right? Like, again, it's this 3 to 6 month time before you might contribute, like before a junior developer might contribute, and that should be okay. Because as you build them up and you teach them the ways of your company, they will actually become the next level of developer for your company and usually be a much better domain expert due to the fact that they were fresh. They had no ideas, like no convoluted ideas in their heads about how this stuff should be done. So they're being taught the ways of your company. They will be a better domain expert for you. That's the mentality that companies should take. The reality is not a lot of companies do, but again, this is a general overview. So I'm kind of pushing that mentality. Hopefully engineering managers hear this and they will push that mentality. And hopefully you as a junior developer can also kind of explain yourself a little bit better when you're getting into a role that has less mentoring than it should, because it is beneficial for both the company and you to give you a good base in the company's fundamentals so that you can then build that base up and then teach it to the other developer coming in after you. Just a little tangent there, but regardless. Typically, junior developers will be given very direct, distinct tasks initially, starting from basic level, like writing documentation or changing some text around or changing a button color and stuff like that. And then potentially implementing some more complex but heavily scoped features. What does that mean? Heavily scoped features means that they've been predetermined what is required of them. The requirements have been gathered for you, right? Like everything that you need to know about that feature, barring some maybe really strong edge cases, should be there in the description of the ticket or the explanation of however they assign you the ticket or the task. It should be fairly clear what you need to do. You just need to sit down and code it without having to discuss it with anyone too much, without having to come up with your own ideas. All of that should be there. You should just be able to implement, right? So the implementation might be a little bit tricky sometimes. So like a junior developer can usually do some heavily complex programming. That's not the case. That's not like the amount of the ability of the programmer isn't really indicative of their level. It's the fact that what's been scoped for you very clearly is. And I'll explain as we go down the levels or we go up the levels why that's important.
Like it comes to be about seniority, but not necessarily seniority in the way of like, well, I'm going to get more hours because I have seniority. It's more of how long you've stewed in the environment as well. Because if you're super used to the environment, then a lot of things will come naturally to you. So if you, I'm sure the scoping conversation will cover a bunch of this, but if you accidentally cause a major incident, I mean, someone who's been in the environment of a web developer, especially at that same company, will have seen what happens when a major incident occurs and what the behavior is, instead of having sort of like a freak out and then cool down period, and then you tackle the problem, you'll more than likely be able to kind of handle that better, or at least, again, have been exposed to it. And therefore, it's a way different. It's just experience talking, really. It's a way different way of kind of tackling things, because you're not like, what do I do? What do I do? What do I do? Just today, as an example, Mike and I had an accounting problem with their software, not with the actual thing, because something wasn't importing. And so Mike and I put our heads together and, you know, luckily found a solution. But the solution was simple. There was a different area to import a type of statement of account, basically. And I was going to do it the hard way because I just did a Google search. That's what they said. Mike found another way to do it that was easier. And boom, there you go. Neither of us knew the solution off the top of our heads. But now that we have that experience is the point. If this happens again next year where things aren't importing correctly or what have you, we know how to make a CSV and go and import it into our software so we can continue doing our normal sort of tax season stuff. And that comes with experience. And Mike even knows that year after year, we have each year pretty well, we've had a new type of problem, software problem, or the business grew a point or whatever. But if we hadn't had the previous year's experience, the tax season would be even more chaotic. Imagine if the tax season or the software doesn't work, you have no experience, so you don't even know how to input the stuff yet. Like, you know it from a textbook perspective. Oh, expenses are this and taxes are this and this and whatever, but you've never inputted it yourself. And then the software also doesn't work. Like, think about the chaos. I'm not worried at all about inputting my stuff anymore. We've done that for years, but I was worried about the new thing, but only one thing is the point. So being stewed in the environment really, really can help you handle situations differently. Doesn't mean that you're incapable. I'm sure you'd be capable of figuring out, you know, what to import and where to import it eventually. But it's really a time, money, and experience thing.
Yeah, it's a good indicator, actually. Like, when you're looking at the level of developer, how calm they are under ridiculous circumstances. Because most, you know, staff engineers, senior developers have seen it all in terms of like crisis situations at their company. And what you'll initially see when something goes down is the juniors running around with their heads cut off because they don't know what's going on. And that's not their fault. And that's not like a knock on them. It's a chaotic moment. They've never been through it. And they in their mind, everything's screwed. And it is. A lot of times, you know, production's down. You're losing hundreds of thousands of dollars a day or something like that. Like, that is a realistic situation you could find yourself in. And that's a scary thing if you've never experienced it before. But the senior devs who've seen it 7, 8, 20 times, and have sat in the war rooms, their mindset is, okay, what's the thing that I can do to fix it? And then they just go in and try to do that. And then they go to the next thing, the next thing, next thing. Because they've seen it before. They've stewed in it, like Matt said. They've felt the pressure. They've run around like the junior developer before, and they realize that does not do anything, right? Like screaming and running and jumping or up and down and crying, whatever happens at the situation. Like, I hope that's not the case. But it's not going to solve the problem. Solving the problem is you just sitting there at your computer, going step by step through the debugging and figuring out the solution, right? Like, that's the reality. And if you haven't, and you've been through it, so you know, like, you know, no one's going to get fired, hopefully. You just have to fix the problem.
It's kind of fight or flight, right? At that point where, I mean, I'm no doctor, but I would assume that running around and freaking out is kind of the flight of like, okay, we got to get the heck out of here. But the guys who've been there a long time, they've been through the fight enough times to know that, I mean, we created this thing, so there's a way to get it back up and running.
Yeah.
So just go and, you know, fight it. So you're not necessarily scared of the fight.
Yeah. And there is no unfixable problem, really. And as you become more senior and as you give more influence to a project, you'll put more safeguards in to make sure that whatever happens, you're able to roll back, you're able to, you know, restore a backup, you're able to, you know, switch to a different server, you're able to scale, whatever you need to do. You have 15 different things that you can do just to get yourself like started again, essentially. And that's what gives you that calm a lot of the time. Just knowing that And without the experience, you'll never have that calm. And that's normal. That's okay. So I just want to give a kind of an example task before we move on to intermediate here for a junior developer, just so you know, like the mindset of what I'm trying to say. Let's say a company is trying to make a to-do list. I'm giving a very generic project example, because I think everyone, if they're getting into development, has made a to-do list at this point. An example task for a junior developer would be to create like the task item component, the component that's displayed after someone inputs the item into the input form. And it's displayed right under with like a checkbox and tags, whatever the priority, whatever is required of that component. The junior developer's job would be to create that component, be able to take in some props and display them statically, right? Like to build it maybe statically. And then for you to be able to pass that component off to someone else so that they can loop through and create, like, you know, show all the components that have been created from the database. Like, you wouldn't touch the database most likely at that point, especially if you're just starting out. You would just create that like static component that someone else could use to then display all of the to-do list items.
That would be the scoping, right? You're not touching that production database. You're just touching this little thing. So, I mean, if the to-do or the checkbox, excuse me, doesn't show up, then it's not the biggest deal in the world.
Yeah, exactly. It's not the biggest deal. And you know that there needs to be a checkbox. You know that there needs to be a tag. You know that there needs to be some sort of description, number, whatever. Like, all of that is known to you.
And you know the scope to troubleshoot it if there's a problem.
Yeah, all you have to do, and usually you'll have a design. All you have to do is build it, let's say. And this is very clearly a front-end developer task. Like, there is junior back-end developers. Maybe you would create the API just for that element, right? Like, it's usually a very scoped, smaller task that is clearly defined. That's the signal of a junior developer task. And that's how, like, a lot of times when you're planning out a project, you'll kind of scope your tasks depending on what team you have. If you have like three junior developers, then you need to scope enough tasks for those junior developers, and then you rate how good they are and stuff like that. So it's just how it is with junior developer. But moving on, let's go to the next level here, which would be developer or intermediate developer, whatever you want to call it. At this point, you've shown you can handle however many tasks that have been assigned to you without any issues. You've begun to expand from just assigned tasks to maybe scoping out and creating smaller tasks. So let's say that, again, you have that to-do list item. Maybe you found that, hey, there's another point to the to-do list item. There should be like a drag, you know, so you can reorder them. So now you're scoping out like, hey, I need to scope out this drag functionality. I need to talk to this department. I need to talk to the design. I need to add that. That's a signal that you're moving up in the development sphere. Like, the fact that you're thinking ahead like that, the fact that you're now creating the task on top of the task that you were scoped out to do, and you're being trusted to do that, right? Like, that's a key thing. Typically, you're talking like 2 to 5 years experience. These numbers are very arbitrary, though. Like, you do need some experience. Like, you can't be a developer of 0 years of experience, but some people evolve faster. Some people like learn a lot faster. Some people learn slower. So don't get bogged down too much in the time, but just to give you a range. And then you've probably had a developer role in the past, 1-2 developer roles, maybe at the same company, right? Maybe you've been at the company for a couple of years. That's still a developer role. At this point, you should be being tasked with more complex tasks. So you might be still getting scope tasks, but now those scope tasks are touching multiple things, like maybe integrations, APIs, maybe you're implementing some algorithms. Like, they might be still pretty scoped, but they're more complex than they were before. But you're also probably going to be tasked with some small portions of a project that you own. And I want to take a moment to discuss a little bit what ownership is, because at this point in your development career, you want to start thinking about it a lot, because ownership means that, hey, you've been assigned a feature. Like, you're, maybe not the whole project, but you've been assigned a feature of the project, and it's up to you to figure out what needs to be built to get that feature ready, right? So you have to go out and you have to maybe talk to either your tech leads or other developers or maybe even stakeholders to get the ideas on what they need from that feature. And there might be a design doc already, so you have to maybe just deduce from the design doc, create the tasks with the project manager, and kind of make sure that the feature is built from start to finish. So now you're not getting a scope task, you're scoping out some of the tasks, right? Usually it's still in a pretty small circle, and you might get a scoped portion of the project, but you have to break it up. And that's what ownership is. Like, you're given ownership of that feature, and you're responsible for getting it from start to finish, right? You'll still have help along the way. You'll still be it'll still be reviewed. You'll still usually have some sort of management that checks everything. Like you're not on your own, and you might even have a developer working with you on it, but you're given that ownership. And just to give you an example of what a task like that might be. So again, if the company's creating a to-do list, you might be assigned the user setting screen, right? So that is a more ambiguous thing than just a to-do list item that needs to be statically displayed. There's not much clarity there. So you might have to go and figure out what an MVP of that would be. So like, you know, you're going to need to display the user's email. You're going to need to display the user's, username. You're going to need to display how they can log in, reset, maybe a reset password. There's something like you're going to need to create a list of requirements for that screen. You might need to talk to design to be like, can you give me a screen for that? You might need to have a back and forth with them saying like, this is possible, this is not possible. And then you need to work with your PM to figure out timelines. You might need to work with them to figure out like, you know, who's going to be also assigned to this. You might have to assign some of these tasks to junior developers. So that means you need to scope them out really well so that the junior developers can come in and contribute, right? And you'll still obviously need to complete tasks yourself. You're going to be doing a lot of coding. Developers, intermediate developers, junior developers, they do most of their time should be spent coding. Okay, these are the code monkeys, as you call them, right? Not to be derogatory, but like these are the people that are on the keyboard. And then after the feature's done, you'll probably be the one presenting it. So you'll probably be at the stand-up or at the retrospective or at the meeting with the stakeholders. You'll be the one being like, okay, account setting screen is done. Let's take a look, and you'll run through it. This is a good good indicator to you that you've evolved from junior and you've moved into an intermediate developer.
I have a question here. So a lot of the time you'll be, or I don't know if it's like what we preach or like what trainers in general will preach or whatever, but recruiters will definitely say this. It's, you know, take a design from the design team and make it, you know, a reality for a front end developer. I mean, and in this case, like in this little example that you gave, you were talking about how like, you know, you were assigned the setting screen, but you are the one that had to go out and get designed to do that and all and on all that stuff. How common is each of those scenarios? Like, are there companies out there? I'm sure there are, but are there companies out there that basically will some sort of administrative team, project managers, whatever, yada yada, will figure all that stuff out, and then you are given programming tasks that are at a difficulty based on your level? Because to me, before kind of jumping into this episode, I would have assumed, okay, like the coding tasks of a junior are easier. In your case, you also mentioned scoped. And then at intermediate, they're harder programming tasks. Senior, they're even more difficult. But it was less like, hey, I have to actually go to the other team members, figure out the MVP and stuff. I always just assumed that that would be handled by some sort of team that would almost vet everything and then be like, okay, now it needs to function. Call the dev in. Here's all the stuff they need.
So I would say that's uncommon. The scenario you're describing is pretty uncommon because the team that would be vetting and creating it would have to be pretty technical to be able to create the proper tasks and timelines.
I see.
What usually ends up happening is that you need developers to be part of that process pretty heavily. They'll plan the high level. A lot of times, like a project manager with a tech lead, and we'll talk about that in a second, or a senior developer, will plan the high level. The senior developer and the tech lead will give them estimated timeframes on larger level features. But it's up to the developers then to work with the team leads, and the project managers to figure out what is required to create the features that have been determined required for that project. Okay. And that's where you break down the nitty gritty. That's where you have these planning sessions where you create these tasks. That's where you'll go through the project management software. Someone will usually create all the tasks, but you'll have a very open dialogue with the team when creating them. And usually as soon as you even a junior developer has input here, but as soon as you evolve, like get up to a regular developer, you have a lot of input into this. Because you're the one that's going to have to do it. At the end of the day, you have to be able to understand what is required to get something done. And that, again, like that really is a big differentiating factor. If you're just going into work and looking at programming tickets and solving them one by one, I mean, those jobs exist. I'm not saying that they don't exist. Obviously, they do. But
would they be legacy code bases? Like things where, you know, our menus have been defined for 15 years.
Like a support engineer,
Well, not even that. I mean, like, quite literally, a good example might be someone that works on Android, where the Android design language has been decided. And sure, there's upgrades here and there, but if like you work at some place where things are defined, like you know, okay, my main menu needs to look like this. If I click into it, my sub menu goes here. I need an icon here. Would that, because like obviously Android is, you know, super complex, like an operating system is just going to be super complex. So you're going to have so many layers. Would it have to be ticketed out? I don't know. I guess that's what I was kind of thinking of, is like,
but who would be doing the tickets? That's the thing. Like it wouldn't, it would still have to be to some level, the development team doing the tickets,
right?
The developer input, like that. That's the problem, is like, you can't, like there are tickets created by management and non-technical leadership for sure.
Sure.
Especially, of course. Well, support tickets are one thing. The second thing would be like high level feature requests.
Like, hey, I need a sale banner because there's a sale coming up Black Friday or whatever.
But the reality, when you get that down, if the ticket requires it, like if you need a sale banner, that could be the standalone ticket. Like you might not need to break it down. But a lot of times it'll be a feature request, and then you break that feature request down into implementation tickets. And that's the part where you need that level of ownership. You need that level of buy-in, like not buy-in, sorry. You need that level of understanding from a developer to be able to implement, to be able to create those implementation tickets.
I guess what I'm thinking of is realistically working with something that's super established and super locked down due to its complexity or being super legacy. And everyone's scared to make changes. And I'm not so much thinking of like creating something new, even if it's just something as simple as a menu button, you know, or a full menu, like a settings menu. I'm thinking more in that established rather than you are establishing. Interesting.
Yeah, I get. Yeah. Yeah. It's still. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. I feel like you still have a little bit of the developer having to create the implementation criteria. I don't know. Like, again, the more corporate you get, the more different they handle it. Every corporation handles it very differently, from my experience. But at the end of the day, you still need the developer to take that ownership of whatever task they work on. Even if it is well-defined, it still needs to be like, hey, I need to get this one from start to finish. That might require you to, like, you know, break it down, have that conversation back and forth with the stakeholder, the person that submitted the ticket, the person that needs this feature done. Like, you need to be able to, at the end of the day, you just need to be able to get something done to a high level of efficiency and a high level output. Like, it needs to be done properly. If you don't ask follow-up questions, if you don't break stuff down, if you don't have that back and forth, and you just, the ticket is gospel everything, it's going to lead to people, to mistakes most of the time, because like there's a miscommunications all the time with just written text, as we know. And it's going to lead to you not just going up the ladder, because it is going to be like, okay, well, you know, John just, he does the tickets and that's great, but he's not clarifying anything. Like some of the tickets are very vague, and sure, that's maybe on the people creating the tickets. It is on the people creating the tickets. But the reality is like, that's going to happen all the time. Like people will create tickets really quickly and then understand that the developer will reach out to them if they have any questions. If no one's asking them any questions, that's sus. That means that probably the feature is not going to be implemented properly.
That was the most Gen Z moment of this entire podcast. Correct.
Yeah, the whole thing. I said sus. Yeah.
Sus AF, fam, no cap.
Yeah.
For real though.
Yeah.
I do have another comment though, if that's all right. I just, cause I'm like working this out in my head, and like, I guess like I'm not questioning your authority or something on this. I'm just like trying to get this into my head, to be clear. Yeah. Cause I have not worked in this type of environment. I think what I was thinking of this whole time is thinking of, from an IT perspective, you work within Windows and you work within specific IT parameters. However, from a developer perspective, you're more doing you're being more creative. But that being said, when I think about it, Mike, if you were to give me a task of like, hey, my computer is not booting up, I'm not going to request from you or a project manager a list of troubleshooting steps that I must perform. I know how to troubleshoot that. I know how to fix that. I'm going to go fix it my way. And that way that that I use to fix it is going to be very common to my colleagues, more than likely, but it will be slightly different. So there is that ownership of the task. But I was thinking more so in the way of like, oh, like, can you install Word? I mean, there's only so many ways to install Word. So I'm thinking of that sort of like almost isolated task, if that makes sense. where Word has an installer. I installed Word for you. Now you need to sign in for your license. And there's not another way to do it. But if you said, I need something to run Word, I might give you Linux and tell you to use the web version. I might give you Windows. And that's the ownership of the task. Do you know what I'm trying to say? So like when you're developing, then that makes sense. Like now I'm starting to understand more of what you're saying.
So I think that's a perfect example of like that, like level one to level two thing, because level one technicians, like the help desk technicians, they might be set on the task of installing Word on X computers, on X right. person's computer.
Right. Okay.
But a level two technician or a level three or level four, I don't know what I haven't.
Levels are a bit skewed with companies.
Yeah, levels are a bit skewed, just like with development. But like a level two technician, let's say, would be tasked with the idea of like, hey, we need a word processor that works across all of our computers. What's the best one? Give us an implementation guide. That's a much more vague task that they have to then own, figure out what the computer landscape is for whoever the thing. Maybe they'll have to ask clarifying questions in terms of like all of our computers. Like, do all of us need word processors? Or is it just the, you know, the design team or like the marketing team? And then you have that follow up and then you clarify that task. You create steps and you create an implementation guide. And then you go and assign that task to a level one technician of actually installing the processor that you've selected.
Right. Yeah. Like right. I've come up with the plan by checking in and saying like, hey, how much power do you guys use in that department? And
correct.
Like computationally and
yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah, I'm thinking too much in the like isolated environment still.
Yeah.
Okay. Interesting. All right.
Okay. Senior developer. At this point, you've handled the implementation and scoping of several features in projects, right? Like you've done the settings page, you've done the history view of your to-do lists, you've done a timeline, like whatever. You've done a bunch of different views. You've worked with all the relevant departments shown and you know, taken assigned high-level ideas and taken them to full implementation. So again, you've talked to your project manager and they said, we need a settings page. And you've done everything required to get that settings page into production, including the requirements, including talking to the design team, including implementing a lot of the features yourself, et cetera, et cetera. You're typically like 5 to 10 years of experience, right? Like at this point, you've been in the industry for a while. You've seen a lot of things. You're probably not running around with your head cut off when shit goes down. That's reality. At this point, you're probably responsible for large portions or entire applications yourself. Or like, so maybe you're leading or maybe you're in charge of the to-do list, the whole to-do list, right? Like you're building extra features, you're scoping them out, you're helping out with junior developers, you're doing a lot of the a lot of the programming work, but a lot of also the planning work, the infrastructure work, you're doing a lot for the entire thing you're owning the platform start to finish. You're potentially responsible for complex implementations that can touch many parts of the company. So at this point, you're probably like, not only are you building the front end of this application, you're probably connecting to like the credentials server that the company owns, right? Like, so you're dealing with some security stuff. You're dealing with the database schema, right? Like, it's not a requirement. And like knowing the full stack is not a requirement to be a senior developer. I should be very clear on that. But a lot of times you have touched a lot of areas and you're probably deep in some of those areas. So maybe you're a front end developer, like pretty deep in the front end, but you have touched the other areas. You've worked with the other departments. Maybe you've connected with them. You've pulled all the data into the app. You've sent them data. You have a good understanding of the entire stack that your company uses front to back, not just your project that you're working on, but all the other projects that are in your company. Like what's the mentality? How is the tech stack structured? How is the infrastructure working? Stuff like that. You would probably be mentoring quite a bit. You'd be required to mentor the intermediate and junior developers. You'd be sitting with them over the shoulder, pair programming, maybe doing some onboarding stuff. Like you'd be helping bring the next generation of developers into the company. You'd be doing some design system architecture or all design system architecture. Senior developer can go really far up and down. You might be doing the entire architecture of the project you're working on. You might be helping with the architecture of the company. You might be doing a lot there. But again, you'd be an expert in something like, for instance, like TypeScript. Maybe you're a really good front-end dev that knows TypeScript. Maybe you're a good back-end dev that knows PHP, whatever. I think a lot of developers, myself included, are pretty shallow. So they master of none, but you know, what's the phrase? Is it
Jack of all trades, master of none?
that's a very typical thing that like an intermediate or a junior developer is. A senior developer usually will be deep into something, at least one or two things, right? Like that's, they've done this for a long time. They're like SQL query master. So like we have a developer that we're working with right now that like has done all the SQL queries. So whenever I have an SQL question, I go to them, they give me an answer, how to optimize it. That's to me a sign of a senior developer, right? Like they've done this, they've done it many times. They need to look it up sometimes. It doesn't mean that you have it at the top of your head, but you know where to look. You know how to do it. You've implemented stuff like that before.
I do actually want to touch on something here too with the senior developer, because, you know, obviously like the senior developer at the high level, like you already mentioned, it sounds like you just know everything, you know, the whole stack, you know, everything. And like, that's not necessarily the case. Like they're usually into something, and that gives away a lot to imposter syndrome a whole bunch. Cause like me personally, like, I'll get that a bunch with different tasks, but then I realize like, oh, like people don't know DNS and like email as much as I do. And it's like, oh, okay. So then it, like that imposter syndrome kind of seems to go away. I'm not saying I'm a senior dev, you know, necessarily. I'm not saying that at all. But if I was like a tech lead at an IT company or something like that, that touched email a lot, I might be, you know, a complete fool when it comes to the software and the strategies we use to fleet out devices, like a bunch of smartphones or something like that. Maybe I'm a complete fool in that way. But the instant email goes down, the person that was able to fleet out those phones might fall apart. They might not know what the heck to do, and I know what to do. And so that kind of just is a source of that imposter syndrome, because, you know, how can you be an email specialist and a fleetable specialist and a Windows specialist and, I mean, then you're not a specialist, right? If you're specializing in everything, you're not really a specialist anymore.
Correct. And you know what? Realizing that is actually a sign that you're moving towards senior, because as you're kind of going up, you know, going up the ranks, you want to be that guy that can just do everything and you never say no. And you always like, you're like, yeah, I can do the DNS, no problem. I can do the front end. I can do this, the CI/CD. I can do the infrastructure. You just take on a bunch of tasks usually. And that's okay. Like you're trying to figure out what you want to do. But a lot of times, like you're going to do the tasks, you might do them correct. You might do them and they might work, but it's like shallow implementations, right? As you become more senior, you realize that a lot of those shallow implementations are good for only X amount of time or X amount of users or X amount of whatever. And you start to realize that like, and you start to say no a lot. So someone comes to you and they're like, well, we need like the database to scale. You're a senior developer. Can you scale the database? And we're like, no, I'm actually a front end senior developer. Like, right. I don't know. I've touched the database. I've done some database work, but like theoretically, like I can't do it. So you know what? John knows how to do it. And that's what I rely on. And that like, delegation, that trust in another person's skills and knowing how they are and knowing how you complement each other, that's a really good sign that you're approaching that level of developer, because you're no longer running around with your head cut off. You're no longer looking at the entire stack like trying to figure out where you fit. You know where you fit. Like you know what you're good at. You know what you're bad at. And you know that you can do stuff. Like if you need to, you can probably do everything in the stack. Sure.
You could probably do that database change, sure, like they asked for, sure.
100%. But you know that John's can do it 10 times faster. Why? What's the point of you wasting, you know, 3 hours if he can do it in 10 minutes?
Well, actually, I have a story about that. I remember one time in IT, it was literally my last 3 days. My term was coming up, and quite literally, I was told like 3 days before, it was like, hey, can you spin up this telecom software? And I was like, what? I've never touched telecom software before. I only got 3 days here. Why would I just suddenly do this? And it's like, well, like we're expected to just sort of know this stuff and, you know, we're supposed to be agile and you can figure it out. Failed horribly, because I went around to a couple of people that I knew in the office and was like, hey, man, like, do you have any like pointers on this? Apparently, I'm supposed to get this up and running in 3 days. Not that I'm worried about it, because I mean, if I don't get it done, I'm leaving. So and it just failed horribly because I was told this software is really complex and really weird. It's basically coding, but it's for telecom and it's not actually coding. It's like a complex like instruction set, basically. So it's more or less coding in a way. And I was told this is not going to be something that you can spin up in 3 days. And like, I don't know, just they wanted me to do it. It didn't get done. That was the end of that.
Yep, exactly. And that's the... Assigning that task is also a weird, like, I don't know why they would do that. 3 days left in your job. That was them just reaching. I don't know. That's a weird thing to do.
A classic IT tale.
It is really a classic IT tale.
It's like, why did they do that to us? Like, well, I mean, I don't know.
It absolutely happens in development too. So like, it's just, you know, it's corporate infrastructure, corporate stuff. Okay. For an example task for senior developer. So most likely, again, you'd be in charge of the entire to-do list architecture at this point. You'd pick the tech stack that works with your company's technical expertise. So like when I say, again, we're talking about like you're specialized, you understand the entire tech stack and you understand who to ask about the other parts of it. So if you're not good at database scaling, you know, John is. During this process of picking the company's tech stack for the to-do app, you would go to John and get his recommendation. You put it all together. You know how to do that because you're a senior developer and you get it working, right? You'd scope it out. You'd scope out all the third-party services that are required. You'd provide cost estimates for the infrastructure that's required. You'd work with a team to come up with a high-level features that need to be built, right? You'd work with the stakeholders, so the people that need this to-do list application, your managers, you work with the team, the project leads, whoever needs to be worked with. You'd work with them top to bottom. Again, your goal is to get the task done. Your goal is to get the to-do list done this time, not just one part of the to-do list, the entire thing. And you're going to own that start to finish. You'd usually create app scaffolds. So you'd be the one that goes in initially, creates the GitHub repo, creates all the connections for the tech stack you've chosen, or assigns that creation to someone else. You'd set up the root of the components. You'd set up everything that you think would help the team succeed. That's your goal. And you'd probably still be doing some coding here, like quite a bit of coding, honestly, for a senior developer. You'd be doing some like authentication patterns, testing methodologies. You'd be doing the big stuff. You wouldn't be coding the buttons, like most likely, unless you're the only developer, that can happen. You probably wouldn't be coding the buttons, but you'd be doing the bigger stuff, and all the junior developers, all the intermediate developers, they would probably be checking in with you to make sure everything's going properly. You'd be helping them get past big issues that come up inevitably. Again, the whole thing, again, we go back to ownership. The more you go down the stack, the more you own. Next thing here is tech lead. So at this point, tech lead, in my eyes, is very similar to senior developer. I want to make that clear. There's not much of a difference, especially from a skills perspective in terms of programming. A lot of times a tech lead will have senior developer skills in terms of programming, but they will lean more towards a leadership position.
I was actually going to ask about this, though, is a tech lead in terms of a position? I mean, this is more of a corporate politic question more than like a real question, I guess. Like they're more of the manager of the team without being the manager of the team.
Yes.
I've been told in the past that this position is starting to be antiquated. Is that true?
It kind of is, mostly because it takes one of your best developers out of the rotation of development. Due to the fact that you're leaning towards leadership, you have to do a lot of leadership tasks.
Right.
Like, so now you're mentoring more than you were as a senior developer. You're in charge of onboarding, essentially, right? Like you're in charge of assigning those onboarding tasks. You're in charge of the communication between all your developers internally. You're the mitigation point between, like, you're the communication point between the development team, the engineering team, and the management. You're in between. So you're talking to the development team and doing development tasks, but you're also talking to, you know, project like team manager, like managers from like a CTO level or whatever, down to just the people that plan, project planners, stuff like that. So you're trying to make sure that as much as possible, your engineering team is engineering and doing development work, and the management knows what's going on, right?
Right.
You're making the technical decisions as well for the team. So a lot of again, it's very similar to a senior developer, but you're stepping a lot into that management role. And your goal, instead of making the best product so much, like it is still a goal, but one of their other main goals is unblocking and making sure that the team is working as efficiently as possible. So it's a little bit of a shift for a developer, and you're right in the sense that it is sort of going away and it's becoming more of a thing where like we have more technical project managers now that understand the technical aspects of a project.
I see. Okay.
They're not like typical managers, so they're not like above you or anything like that, but their role is to help you get the project done.
And they can talk shop, basically.
They can talk shop, correct. They can talk shop, they can get the project done. They're now responsible for talking to management. They free up, again, the whole role of the tech lead and the project manager is to free up the development team as much as possible, make sure that they're not blocked, and make sure that everything is going according to schedule.
They're like a filter. So instead Correct. Of having a three-step filter, which is probably redundant in some companies, you're going more to a two-step.
Yeah, that's it. Exactly. And you'd probably be doing a lot of like technical decision-making as well. Like a lot of technical lead is technical decision-making. So you'd be, again, architecture. A lot of times with tech leads, you'd be more thinking architecture as it applies to the whole company as well, because it's a little bit like you're a little bit more above and a little bit more thinking more holistically rather than thinking just like, oh, okay, just the to-do list app. Like, yeah, that's important, but you're also usually the tech lead for like multiple teams or something like that. So you're thinking more holistically of how this to-do list app plays with our email client server or something like that. I don't know. I'm just making shit up. But regardless, you're thinking about how these things play together, how these things connect. Are they going to conflict? Should we connect them at all? Should we spin up another service for that? Whatever. You'd still be coding. So like a tech lead still codes. But the problem is that the tech lead, like usually it's a 50-50 split. And it becomes very difficult because as we know with coding, it's all about that momentum. So as soon as you sit down and you're really like programming, if you're distracted by a manager asking you for an update, or a customer asking why their stuff isn't working, or one of your engineers coming to you for help, all of that can derail you and your coding becomes less and less and less. And usually a lot of tech leads will either transition back to a senior developer role or a developer role, or move on to management. Like staying as a tech lead for too long, I think isn't very common anymore. It's more like you'll transition to one or the other depending on what you like more. It's a way to like try out management without actually being a manager.
Hard to go back though, I would assume.
I would
corporate wise, like because they'll probably bump someone to a senior, and then it's like, well, I want to go back. It's like, yeah, but now there's not a hole in the team.
It kind of is, yes, it sort of, but it does happen. Like I've personally seen it happen a couple times where like someone steps into the tech lead role, and then they're like, I don't want to do this, and then they go back to being just a developer.
Okay.
It can't stunt your like trajectory in the company. Like if your goal is to become CTO, yeah, that's probably going to screw it up. But that's what you realize, that you don't want to do that. Like, right, you just want to be a developer. It's a good realization to have, because without stepping into management full time, you're still able to step back. If you step into management and you manage for 2 years, it's really difficult to go back to being a developer. That's the reality. So it's good to have that intermediary. I recommend a lot of people, like if you like the ability to mentor and you like the ability to help your team succeed, that's a good indicator for being like, okay, I think I'm ready for a tech lead role. And then maybe I should try to do it, because it is usually you get more money. Usually you get a trajectory into management if that's what you want and stuff like that. So there is positives about it. Okay. So an example task here would be, you know, scoping out the entire implementation of the to-do list with the stakeholders and engineering team. Again, very similar to a senior engineer. You'd assist the project manager on the project. You'd do a lot of the sitting and planning and creating the tasks. And just like you'd be the one discussing the task with your development team and coming back to the project manager and being like, okay, we need this like, animation for the to-do list. But the reality is that animation is going to set us back 2 weeks, and the project planner will usually be like, okay, let's put that to phase two, et cetera, et cetera. Like those conversations are constant. You'd make sure that the development team has everything they need for the success of the project. So make sure, again, there's no roadblocks. That's your number one goal, really. You're trying your best to make sure that everyone is cleared every day. And this isn't something you do once and move on. This is something you do every day to make sure that, like, hey, Jim isn't sitting there waiting for Billy, and Catherine isn't sitting there waiting for Joe. And now we have two developers that are just sitting there doing nothing because they're roadblocked. You need to clear them. And you would do most of the stuff that the senior would do with just a little bit more leadership responsibilities. And now we move on to the last one here we're going to talk about. This is the one I know least about because it's the one I'm farthest from, but it's the staff engineer. So this is not every company will have staff engineers. Usually, again, this is left for larger companies with many projects. And this is the role of the most senior engineering person on your team. Sometimes it'll be like if you have enough of an engineering department, you might have multiple staff engineers totally. But the staff engineer is usually the person that was there from, you know, they were there when it was written, when the scripture was written. They're the ones that knew about all the decisions. They're not necessarily the ones that made the decisions. They might have been a junior when the company started, but 20 years later, now they're the staff engineer because they've been there throughout all the decision making. So any question that you have about any part of the stack, they're going to know either how to solve it, who to go to, or what you need to do to get to the answer. That's a really good indicator of a staff engineer. If there's like a guru in your company, that's usually the staff engineer.
It's kind of like they were there for when there was only one development team, and then yeah. They saw it split into multiple departments, and they're aware of all that splitting.
Correct. But the weird thing is that you can get a staff engineer role at a company. So like Google famously and Microsoft, they have staff engineer roles that you can apply to even without ever having to work at Google or Microsoft. But my guess is, again, this is where I don't have the expertise to be able to talk to that part. My guess is that when you get into that role as a staff engineer at another company, you just have so much experience that you could probably like be like, I need like 3 months. I'll learn all the systems and then I'll be your domain expert. Right. So they probably sit down, talk to everyone, get the knowledge of the systems, and then they help the direction not of like a project again, they help the direction of a company. Like, hey, we're gonna move all of our services. We have 15 different applications from Google Cloud to AWS. That's usually a decision that a staff engineer would make with the CTO consulting. Because that's a decision that's gonna cost millions of dollars. That's a decision that's going to take years or a year or whatever.
Change hiring, you know, different change skills.
Like it changes so much, and there needs to be so much research done and knowledge gained and stuff like that, that it needs to be someone that knows everything top to bottom. And that is a staff engineer. They're usually the ones that are paid ridiculous amounts of money. They're not managers. They do mentoring. They do help with a lot of like mentoring, especially of senior developers and intermediate developers. But they're not managers. They are developers that don't do a lot of coding. They do system architecture stuff. Like that's their thing. Like a lot of staff engineers won't touch code very often unless it's for like their own projects or small things or testing stuff. They'll be there like going from team to team and solving issues essentially. They'll just be like, okay, team A has an issue where their costs have ballooned up to $1 million. I'm going to go there and figure out how to lower their costs by writing this query better or telling Joe to write the query better, whatever. Like they know where to go to figure out how to do the things that need to be done. It's really the best way I can describe it. Like I'm not, again, it's like a 10 plus year experience level, usually at a company that you just gain the domain knowledge. Again, they're very deep in their domain knowledge, usually of multiple things. Like now they know databases. Now they know front end, back end. Like they know multiple things, not everything. Can't know everything. Not possible, but they know where to go. So yeah, that's a staff engineer. I don't know what an example task for a staff engineer other than the ones that I've mentioned. I don't have it like for a to-do list. They would, I don't know, they would be the ones that like decide on high level stuff. Like you can't use GCP, you have to use AWS. They would be making those decisions.
What scale, like I know you said a larger company, but like what scale do you think it would start at having a staff engineer? Like I don't know, would a startup ever have one? Is it always just established companies that would, you know, effectively be old enough to have legacy? Is it just amount of staff? Like, what do you think?
Well, I'm sure startups hire staff engineers. I think a lot of times, I don't want to get flamed for this incorrectly, because a staff engineer's job is to slow things down almost, not speed things up. They're like, they can see 10 steps ahead, so they know the mistakes that you're making. And startups make a lot of mistakes. I want to make that clear. But they make mistakes in lieu of speed. They need to get their product to market ASAP. Otherwise, they don't have the funding to go much farther.
Right.
A staff engineer would most likely come in and be like, we can't use this Vercel garbage. That won't last. You'll have to rebuild everything in 2 years. They're probably right. But the reality is in 2 years, that company won't exist.
So because it would have had no revenue, so like yada, yada. Okay.
Yeah. So a lot of times a staff engineer isn't needed in the early days of a startup, the first 3 years, let's say.
Right. Okay.
And is almost a detriment. And this might get me a little bit flamed. I'm not sure. But come at me. It's fine. At me on Twitter, at HTML everything. I'm perfectly fine with being wrong on this. But I've spoken to some hiring people. I've spoken to startups. I've worked at startups before. And I've worked with startups that have hired staff engineers and I've had issues, and I've worked with and I want to be clear, I've worked with good like staff engineers that understand their role in a startup, where they're like, 2 years, we need to get something out, and then they're already thinking ahead for the next 5 years. So they are willing to do that, like burst, but they're putting in systems that allow you to transfer easily to the next step, which is great. And that's probably a very valuable startup staff engineer. I think they're just not as common.
That is a fascinating take on that. Like the mistakes of a smaller company, I know this is almost a tangent at this point, but the mistakes of a smaller company in terms of longevity could keep the company alive. That's a very interesting take. Yeah. It does make sense though. If you think about just even like your own personal growth, like if you were like, hey, I'm going to go and like do some sort of like weight loss thing, and you follow the instructions of the doctor and it doesn't work, the doctor will then try something else. But you would never have known that that thing didn't work without trying it before. And so it's like, it's almost like sometimes the mistake is literally a part of the success. It's a part of the building block, if you will. And obviously, we talk about that in terms of personal growth, which my example was. But in a company, it's sort of, we always, I mean, from the outside looking in, you always assume a company is going to do everything they can to prevent mistakes. But sometimes the mistake is not a mistake. It's keeping them alive. It's a really interesting take.
Yeah, it's an interesting, like, startups are a very interesting animal. We should do more episodes just on the startup culture, because I think with the market as it is, startups used to be thought of as like a really risky bet, and you know, you wouldn't have any way of being safe there, quote unquote, in terms of like seniority and job security and stuff like that. But the reality is like every company is a risky bet now. I'm not saying startups are any better, but because we're in this environment where free money isn't being handed out anymore, the startups that are surviving are tending to be safer, because they're not requiring the free money to survive. They are either profitable or they have a long-term business objective that the investors are already invested into and willing to spend that extra money for that whatever how many years they need to get to the end goal, right? There's no more like random company that does nothing, has $100 million and is spending money hand over fist that could go broke in a year. Like that is very rare now.
I mean, it makes a lot of sense, because like you and I discussed this a lot when you and I were starting our company, and obviously we weren't in a situation in which we were starting like a startup to like make a device or something like that. But like you and I had so many discussions on how the hell do these people just keep operating, and how are they convincing people to give them money all the time when they have no revenue stream? Like Twitter famously, you know, before, you know, Elon and all the rest of it. I mean, wasn't Twitter losing money hand over fist for years? And it was like, it was already a staple of like, you know, households. Like people knew what Twitter was. It was used on the news and people were like, it was a big social media network. And then it's like, yeah, but by the way, like we're making barely anything, if anything. It's like, what? Like what's happening? Like, what do you mean?
Well, yeah, they've only ever had one profitable quarter or year. Like they're very, yeah, they were always burning money until all of a sudden they were profitable 1 year or one quarter. I can't remember. They are still, I want to be clear, very much burning money on fire right now. So like they haven't, I don't think they've come back into profitability even close yet. We won't know because they're private now, but
isn't that fascinating though? Like that it just, I didn't know when private actually, but, I don't follow Twitter that much. So I just like once it started becoming drama, I was like, oh, okay, I don't care. But it's just so interesting that like you and I have had discussions of like people will buy a website and it's like, well, like this is like this used to, when I bought this website, it made $20 million a month, just making these numbers up, made $20 million a month. And then like I kept running it and it was making $20 million a month, but all the other departments of my company make $150 million a month. So I'm shutting down this $20 million a month. It's like, why the fuck did you buy that thing then? You bought it knowing what it was going to do. Now, yeah, capitalism and growth, but in like a couple of days, like it feels like sometimes there's someone will just buy it, not even want the tech from it. It'll just be like a blog and it's like, yeah, we're shutting. Shut it down. Like, it's like, why? No sense, but major tangent at this point, but still.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just, yeah, it's a weird culture that we have right now with capitalism. And that's why I think we're leaning towards starting to break up the giants, because it's becoming untenable where they will just buy everything and then destroy it due to either mismanagement or like intentional competitor elimination.
Or the IT, or the idea was never going to work in the first place.
Yeah.
Like a lot of these things that are a lot of these startups are like untested ideas, you know, or things that are too soon. There's a classic, you know, like you release a device or a software too soon, then years later it becomes a $1 billion business, but you made, you know, $4 and then you collapsed. Like
that happens all the freaking time.
That happens all the time. Yeah. But I think that concludes this episode, right?
Yeah, for sure. I think we covered it. We did it.
Excellent. Well, if you are interested in supporting episodes like this, remember that we are on Patreon. That is patreon.com/HTML, all the things. Check out the tiers and give that a go. And many thanks to our $3 tier patrons. Tim from the Web Hacker on thewebhacker.com. Jason from Geek Life Radio via geeklife.radio.com. Fire Ant Season via fireantseason.com. Garrett Segal. Level Up Financial Planning via www.levelupfinancialplanning.com. And Joshua via silvio.us. Remember that we also have a Scrimba affiliate link. If you want to learn on an interactive media player code editor, go check that out in the episode description as well as on htmlallthethings.com. And last but not least, we'd like to give a shout out to Michael LaRocca, a contributing author on htmlallthethings.com. Michael is the author of Self-Taught, the X Generation blog at selftauttxg.com. Feel free to leave a comment or a review in the platform that you're listening to this on, and this outro will sign us off.
Been listening to HTML All the Things podcast. Web development, web design, and small business. We hope you've gotten some useful and practical information from this show, and we hope you appreciate that we talk to you like human beings, and we hope you had some fun. We'll be back soon, but in the meantime, hit us up on social media on Facebook, Instagram, and Patreon at HTML All the Things, and on Twitter at HTML Everything. Until next time, this is HTML All the Things, signing off.